says Terry J. Ibell. J's Jonathan is my middle name. Very old, very great. July 23rd, 2018. It's just this is for my 30th birthday as a friendship gift.
That's pretty good.
Nice shirts. Yeah.
Howdy, hey, and welcome to Nice Shorts.
I'm Fu Yang.
And I'm Johnny Niddle.
And this is a show where we interview animators about the shorts they make.
Today we have even more Terry Ibell.
An incredible stop motion and 2D animator in Toronto, Canada.
And host of our favorite show,
The Animation Industry Podcast.
In part two of our interview, he shows us the sets from his Let's Go Luna shorts.
Teaches us about paper mache.
And how to use good versus bad toilet paper for scenery.
We talk about building his home studio during the pandemic.
Along with supplies and budget needed.
And discuss pitching his shows.
Working with a mentor.
And how he balances hosting his podcast with his work schedule.
And now on with the show.
I like built everything out of paper mache, and I knew how to use that because of when I was in grade school and you make like you paper mache a balloon. I'll be back. I'll get you some of the.
Okay.
Yay.
Okay. So here is the first instance of the village that you see in the strange ride.
Huh.
So it's all just paper mache. And you can see I just built it out of cardboard, just like boxes.
Whoa.
But I actually discovered that the more expensive, I use toilet paper because I found that toilet paper, paper mache gives a really nice texture. You see these mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I found that the more expensive toilet paper, which you can kind of see here, retains its, you know how there's like a quilting in the toilet paper and there's like flowers and stuff. It kind of retains that. And you probably can't see it on camera, but I can see like some of the designs, like it retains it somehow. Like after it dries, comes back together and you get some of that quilting pattern. But then I found that the really shitty, like no-name brand toilet paper doesn't do that at all, because it's like so flaky that it gives you like, that's where the mountains, like the top of the mountains are made out of that, because it's so it just leaves a really nice texture afterwards. So that was something fun that I discovered, and it's super cheap as well, because sometimes I look at productions in stop motion where people are making, like, I don't know, they're making stuff out of like really expensive materials and molding everything and 3D printing stuff, and like my style is like, okay, what can I build from my garbage right now?
And when you're done, you have toilet paper left over.
Yeah, really shitty toilet paper. I was like, I don't want this myself.
Oh, yeah. You put it in the guest bathroom and go, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please tell us more, like your home studio during this pandemic and with this project.
And if you could add to it with timeline stuff as this is all happening.
Yes. Thank you, Johnny.
Let me think. Okay, so I finished school in April or May, right before, it was during the pandemic already. And then I had to create the Why Ever's Greens Are Always Green. But I still wasn't sure if it was super happening. So I kind of saved everything to completely last minute. Like I actually waited until I asked for like 50% of the pay up front to be like, hey, I need to buy equipment. Can you pay me 50% up front? Because they're like, usually we pay at the end. And I was like, I don't know if this is real. I don't want to pay. It's like, I'm going to have to buy tripods and lights and all this stuff. So they paid me up front, but I was super happy about that. But I like waited until it came through the mail before I did anything. So then I was like scrambling to like buy everything off Amazon and get like same day shipping. And if you remember, like Amazon during the first couple months of the pandemic, there was nothing. So it was crazy. I was waiting on some materials and things that didn't come for weeks. So then I had to like get creative with what I could do now versus what I could do later when stuff came. But overall, I bought a table. I bought 5 lights from 2 different companies, just because the other thing was like, these are lights for like photo shoots, and photo shoots don't need consistency in lighting, whereas like stop motion, that's so important. Otherwise you'll get a flickering, and there's like no reviews. So I like took chances. So I bought from 2 different companies so that even if one didn't work out, the other one would work out, but they both ended up super great. And I've used both the lights for all of my sets too, because they have different advantages. So I bought 5 lights.
a whole bunch of tripods for the lights as well. I bought a tripod for, I have my camera for many years. I bought that. I bought Dragon Frame. I bought a de-flickering software for stuff that would flicker. I bought that AI thing. I bought a dresser, a 5-drawer dresser that is just filled with craft supplies. I bought like IKEA tubs to like hold all this stuff in. And just so much felt. Oh my goodness. I actually found a company in Toronto that produces giant rolls of felt. And that was perfect because I needed so much green, because at first I was buying these like 30 packs of felt for $30, which was kind of expensive. And I only needed like 2 specific colors out of it. So I had to buy like 5 of them, because the other thing with felt that I discovered is every shade of felt is different, because felt is like made in batches. So even if you buy the same felt over 2 months, they'll be slightly off color because it's like that specifically and they're made specifically. So that was really frustrating to discover. So luckily that's where the felt company in Toronto, where they just produce a giant, you get like a giant batch in. That was like so helpful. Tons of felt, super sculpey. I ran out because every craft store, like in the city and online, I guess everybody started taking up super sculpey crafts. So they just had none. So I ended up finding this 25-pound box of like their cheapest super sculpey, and it was like $100-something.
25 pounds?
Yeah. And it came in, it was literally my only option. Every single store was out. I went to all the like Curry's and art stores in here, Above Ground Art Supplies in Toronto. Nobody had anything. So I found this like 25-pound box, and I was like, this is ridiculous. How is this even going to come in the mail? Luckily, it was like free shipping. But now I have so much, which was really lucky. So I just ended up making like the entire Aiken Drums kitchen is just made out of super sculpey. Like everything just ended up being made out of super sculpey because it was super easy and I had so much. I raided all the dollar stores around here for like all their crafts.
You walk in, they're like, oh, him again.
Yeah. Well, there's these packs of like 50 wires. They're like this long and they're like, I don't know, the consistency and everything. And they come in different colors. It's perfect. And I love them, but they ran out in every store. So I like went around all of Toronto finding these. I finally found one dollar store that had them. So I bought their entire supply. Like I have like 1,000 of them now.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so many glue sticks. I've like broken 3 glue guns, felt, wood. And then I've also tried to incorporate something from nature in each of my shorts. So like actually like going outside here and collecting like sticks and rocks and sand and stuff like that. So I have so many craft supplies.
Would you be willing to like ballpark? So if someone decided they were going to try this at home, for all the budget options you found as well, like a ballpark of what that costs, keeping in mind they're probably not gonna buy 25 pounds of sculpey.
Yeah, well, like the technical equipment can get quite expensive. Like I think Dragon Frame is like a couple $100, and like luckily I had a camera. I ended up borrowing a camera from the stop motion department, Evan and Phil, who are in Toronto as well. They gave me a whole bunch of lenses and camera to borrow for Aiken Drum, which is why Aiken Drum has like nice bokeh focus shots and stuff, but the other ones are just kind of with my like standard lens camera. So luckily I didn't have to spend money on that, but I'd say the tables and the lights and everything and software probably around $2,000-ish, which is very reasonable considering I have a whole studio now. And then the craft supplies, a lot of investment up front with, like, for instance, that super sculpey was over $100, but it lasted me all four shoots or four projects plus some. I've done stuff with it since. I'd say each of the shorts took about $100, maybe $200 in craft supplies just from like the dollar store and felt and things. But for instance, the last short I didn't end up having to spend any money because on craft supplies, because I had so many craft supplies left over and the scope of what I did was much lesser than the other ones.
Does sculpey go bad like after like a few months or something?
No. The Aiken Drum is made out of sculpey that I bought like 7 years ago, just because I was like, this, I never even used it. I just had it because I thought it would be cool to make something out of clay one day, and I just never used it. So like 7 years later, it's still okay.
Mm. That's cool.
About the set, you haven't know how to store them, right? Because at home it's getting crowded and crowded. You have the mountains in your whole town. So
yeah, I got to do something with that.
You live in an alpine village now.
Except for I still have four sets. I have Akendrum's house. I have the bakery from that one as well. And then I have these two villages, but I figured out what to do with everything else. So like this village here is kind of like on display on my bookshelf. And then I've made shadow boxes of all the other characters that were interesting. Yeah. So I took everything out of the sets that were interesting and then threw the sets out because I'm like, what am I going to do with this big paper mache grass landscape? Like, I don't know. Like, it's not even good. It's not even fun to look at. It's just like this long grass, like green toilet paper mess. I want to also have a display cabinet, which let me see if I can turn my camera. You can kind of see. Oh, I have to unplug everything.
What's the award for?
It's a trophy.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm trying not to like unplug everything, but I have this display cabinet here, which has a bunch of sets in it as well. The trophy is irrelevant. My friend got it. It says, it says Terry J. Ibell. Jonathan is my middle name. Very old, very great. July 23rd, 2018. It's just, this is for my 30th birthday as a friendship gift.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, you know, my birthday as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Gonna type in on the screen. Let everyone know.
And then we'll put your phone number so they can call you and say happy birthday.
Oh, no. All right. Call me with jobs. How about that?
You can call if your budget is over $25,000.
Yes, only then.
I think every stop motion, every animator, I think you're all magicians. It's not just, it's that.
You mean wizards?
You specifically are the wizard. The rest are magicians. You have the tome that you're building and you wrote the novel. And you have the silly duck wizard. I'm kind of confused why you don't just exist in a big like wizard robe.
I'm getting there.
You have all the felt left over.
Yeah, I have so much felt. I could make my own wizard robes.
Have you made a wizard hat or wizard robe for yourself?
No, I have not.
You say that like that's bad. That sounds like it'd be fun though.
One day I will appear on a podcast as a wizard in robes. That maybe when I'm done the tome, maybe the tome and the robes come together.
So on your 85th birthday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead
of
a trophy, I get a wizard robe.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Because Terry, you got some pitching experiences. Today we are knowing more clearly is from Silly Dog Wizard to Waste World, like this arrange. So I'm wondering what is the process of that when you're pitching.
Can I make the make it more complex of a question too, just real quick? Is one of them you just made and didn't intend it to be a pitch. It just was a thing. Silly Duck Wizard, right? Wasteworld, you made to pitch.
Yeah. Intentionally, so yeah.
I'd also like to know while you're going through them, like the process of, oh crap, I got to build a world around this to I am building a world around this.
Yeah. So Silly Duck Wizard, I told you the intention of what I made it for. And then I quickly realized that it had some traction. Then I took some time to say, okay, if it's a show, what is it? So that's where I created the Pizza Wizard and his mice, his mischievous mice as characters against the Silly Duck Wizard and his ducks. And I built a little world and the castles they live in and the conflicts they have and the backstories of the ducks and things. So that was, I found that process very difficult because I was taking this concept that was a minute and a half long and then forcing all this lore and extra stuff into it. And it was very difficult. It took me quite a long time to be happy with where things ended up. But so that was that experience. But with Wasteworld, I specifically had it as a pitch and a show as an idea from the start. So I already knew how things were going. I just had to flesh them out and put them in a package that I could sell essentially. So I created Silly Duck Wizard as a pitch for the TAFI, Toronto Animated Arts Festival International Conference, pitched this competition at the conference. And I created Waste. I was creating Waste World already, but submitting it to Taffy helped give a good deadline for myself to get it done. So,
and the place you got on the competitions was?
I won both the competitions and the Ottawa International Animation Festival International Competition as well. So,
and yet the only trophy you get is for being old, which is weird.
Yeah. I would love another old trophy. Like, who gets trophies for being old? But no, there's some cash prizes involved. Like, Ottawa was $5,000 and Taffy was $500. So, and left a year of Toon Boom for free and attention and like all this. And I'm partnering with a mentor, like, super valuable stuff.
Yeah, do you want to shout out the awesome people who've been helping?
Yeah, Julie Stewart was my mentor for the Ottawa Big Pitch competition for Silly Duck Wizard, and she has been absolutely phenomenal with information sharing and walking me through how to make a pitch more sellable and better and received better by producers and broadcasters, and also helping me navigate the wonderful world of option agreements and everything that comes after that. So she's been fantastic, and I could not have asked for a better mentor all through this. And she, it's just super amazing. Her and her husband, Scott, as well. Just super amazing people. So thankful for them. Yeah.
Thank you, them. Terry, today you are also our mentor too. So is there anything you remember? anything you remember from your mentor and your experience, about pitching, what do you want to suggest to us?
Well, so before I created the Silly Duck Wizard pitch, I actually looked at as many pitches I could find online, and there aren't that many. I remember seeing the Rick and Morty one, I think. I saw another one for like a live action TV show that was just writing. I saw the Adventure Time one, which is very famously online that everybody can see. And then viewing all that, they're like standard things you need. You need like who your characters are, their background, their relationships, what the world is, why this is relevant today, what the episodes look like. It's basically like, here's the TV show in a package. But with Silly Duck Wizard specifically, I envisioned it as a shorts program for preschool kids. So I made my pitch as if I was telling you a story as a storybook. So there were no words in my pitch at all, just pictures. And I kind and I only had 6 minutes to pitch it. So I just told the pitch kind of as a story and the episodes as a story. Cause I wanted to do it in my own way, in a way that I would find fun and interesting, and in a way that I thought might be entertaining for people to watch, which worked. So that was great. And with, for instance, with like Waste World, that is so much more complex. Like the relationships, the world is so much more intricate and detailed, and there's so many characters and so much going on that I didn't take the same approach. I kind of took a approach of like telling you all the backstory first, like what happened to the world, why it exists, how humanity has survived, who's in control, and like what's going on with the world now, even before I introduced the main character at all. And then I introduced the main character, and then his best friend, and then the adventures they go on, and kind of this like path journey that the episodes end up in. So completely different. And I drew that one as well, because like, I don't know, I find pitches are most entertaining when there's lots of drawings, which seem to work as well.
Yes. If I could jump in real quick. So one of them, it was the pictures and then you told the story. The other one, you have all the info in the deck. Did you find a difference in how much the people you're pitching to interacted with you based on Silly Duck? There's a lot of room for questions. The other one, it's mostly already answered.
Yeah, Silly Duck Wizard was more difficult to pitch because there were so many questions always afterwards. Because also it was only like a 6 minute pitch. Taffy or the Ottawa Festival, I think, was 10 minutes or maybe 15. And then I was also pitching it in person because this is before the pandemic. I was going to studios and pitching to a team of executives or one-on-one with a producer or developer, or like a couple were through Zoom calls with other countries. And there was like, cause it's such a simple show, like tons of questions. Like, what is the educational element? You know, what are the interactions between the ducks? Like, why is this only 5 minutes? Like, how do you like crazy questions? And I used all of that experience and all the questions that I anticipated to create Waste World intentionally, to be like, here's, I'm just going to answer all the questions you're going to have. And like, Usually what would happen with Waste World is just at the end, there's no questions at all. Like, just like the only questions I remember, I did a pitch with a whole team, and the only questions were like, okay, so what happens when this happens? And like, what happens when, you know, Jim meets King President Business and he finds out this, like, what is he going to do? So there were more questions about like plot points, which I think was really exciting, because you want people to start envisioning how things are going versus like, I'm confused about what's happening, which Silly Duck was a lot. So that was good. So, but I don't know, the whole pitching experience, like every time I've pitched, I've gotten a lot of feedback like, oh, you should do this, or we're looking for this. Mm. And it's tough because, you know, when you're pitching to a big studio like Netflix or HBO or BBC, and they're telling you that you should specifically do this, I'm very tempted to like, okay, let's change this character around to fit what they wanted. But then mm-hmm. I'm like, if they didn't fall in love with the idea and I change this to be what they wanted, they're still not going to fall in love with it. They're still just going to be like, okay, cool. Like, I was with Silly Duck Wizard specifically, I was looking for a partner who just immediately fell in love with the characters and got it, and we can figure out the semantics of what's going on later. It's like, mm-hmm. I love these characters, they need to be brought to life, let's do it, mm-hmm. and figure out what an episode looks like later versus like, oh, what if the wizard was like 10 years young, like what if he was a little boy and his robes were red? And it's like, it's mm-hmm. this is not a concept you're buying. This is just like, you're trying to force some feedback into this thing, but you're mm-hmm. not like, if you want, I'll do the feedback, but you're still not buying the show. Like, you right. know what I mean?
So, I see.
Is there a point that you would walk away from it? So for instance, for a kid show, they want a kid to lead it. So Silly Duck Wizard is not a kid.
Yeah.
If they said, make it a kid, are you like, okay, cool. Yeah, sure. Whatever.
No.
Like, no. Okay.
I'd be like, I'll create a different show for you with a kid as a star. But like Silly Duck Wizard in my mind is such a completed concept at the heart. Like, it's not a completed concept when you're expanding it, but at the heart of what it is, it's a delusional wizard who only knows stuff about ducks, but he's like trying his best to do it. Like, as soon as you change who he is, it's not Silly Duck Wizard anymore. It's something else, you know?
I just feel like it's an actual Don Quixote that has real power.
Yeah, I guess so. For kids.
Yeah.
He's not killing anybody or windmills, I guess.
That's true. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like, here's a concept. If you want it, things can definitely change. Like, for instance, every single studio I pitched to said, why is this in stop motion? Like, we only do 2D. We don't really do stop motion. One studio was interested, but they're like, we want to make this CG. And I was like, well, then it's not this project. Because like, for me, at the heart of what Silly Duck Wizard is and why I think it got so much attention is because it is stop motion. It is something you can mm-hmm. you can reach out and touch, and you know it's real. And I think, like, for mm-hmm. me, that's actually really a huge important part of what it is, because stop motion is like it's the easiest form of animation. It's the first mm-hmm. form of animation anybody tries. Like, you can just take your camera and like move your cup across the screen by taking pictures and play it back, and suddenly it's animated. And then arts and crafts are like such a integral part of playing in preschool that I wanted to create something. I want to create something that reflects a kid's experience in the real world, and knowing that it's coming to life from like magic somehow. So it's like a show about magic that is magic, based on you can create the Silly Duck Wizard himself and animate him yourself, versus like 2D and CG are so far removed from the like natural instinctual experience of being able to animate kind and just barrier. Play with something. Like, if you get the Silly Duck Wizard and ducks as a plush, there's no difference between what you're doing with them and I'm doing with them. It's just there's wires in mine and I'm taking pictures of it over time, and you're just playing with it type of thing.
Yeah.
I love going through YouTube and seeing like little kids try animation for the first time. And there's so many kids putting it out there, and it'll have like 10 views, and they just have like a blob of plasticine, and it'll be like their little kid voiceover. And it just gets me excited, because that's where I started.
The voiceovers are the best part. It's like how Axe Cop started. It's just, you're just like, what is this story? I don't know, but I am into it.
Right.
So going forward, do you think the Waste World way is the way to go, or is it somewhere in the middle between the two pitches?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, nobody's picked up Wasteworld, and I've pitched it to every studio that I intentionally wanted to. And there's some more work I'm doing on it right now. So, like, coming from the business world where, like, you know, you only take risks if you know it's going to pay off. And that's what every studio broadcaster is doing. They're looking for shows that fit a formula that bring them a return on investment.
Or else, like, they put out nothing when they go away.
Otherwise they have nothing. And you know, they're potentially spending multi-million dollars on something over years of time that won't even air till, like, if we were making Silly Duck Wizard right now, it probably wouldn't air till like 2024 or something. Mm-hmm. So, like, as a business, you're looking for stuff that's going to pay off. And I understand that, but at the same time, like, I didn't quit my business world to not pursue this super creative heart in me. And so I'm going to keep creating things that I personally believe in that are super unique and have opportunity, but they may not fit the cookie cutter mold at all. And, you know, like, I see shows coming out all the time that feel very cookie cutter, and they kind of disappoint me somewhat, because I'm like, if you just did a little bit of extra or took it in a different area, it could be phenomenal, amazing. But it just feels like there's specific shows I'm thinking of in my mind right now that I won't mention, but it just feels so lackluster, and like, who's going to care in a year's time? But whatever, you got the funding, you put it out there, you're staying in business. And that's what, you know, supporting a studio is all about. And like, empowering animators to have careers, and other people like voice actors and music composers, etc.
Yeah.
But like, maybe at some point in my career, I will take that route. But I think right now for me, I want to create and put out things that I think are unique and have a unique voice, and maybe change the format a little bit.
How you push for that. So I had to watch kid shows with my niece when I babysit. And there are some that are like, God, no. And they were really popular, but I was like, this is the, like, just brain yelling at me.
They hit on the colors and the music. That's good for kids. But then you come across a show like Bluey or something.
Well, then, but then Yo Gabba Gabba would come on. I'm like, Mark Mothersbaugh. So it's like Devo I listened to when I was younger. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is fun, and I'm into it.
Totally.
I was singing along. I'm like, try it. You might like it. So how do you convince them to try something that out of the mold?
I don't think you convince them. I think what happens is somebody's looking for something out of the mold, and it's perfect place, perfect time. Because I've had a lot of conversations with studios where they have questions. Like, for instance, the Silly Duck Wizard did not go over well with a lot of people because he's an adult, and most preschool shows don't have an adult as the star. It's a little kid leading the way, and there might be an adult narrator or an adult mentor, but it's the kid who's the star. And Silly Duck Wizard, it's a adult. And also, like, Pizza Wizard and his mischievous mice, they're just playing pranks, which aren't really too kosher for preschool shows. Like, they don't want to show characters pulling pranks or like getting up to no good outside of like Swiper No Swiping type of thing. So I've received a lot of feedback, even with Wasteworld. Like, you know, I want to push, part of what I am trying to accomplish with the very cutesy style is I want to push gore a little bit more in kids TV. Like, because you have like a 12-year-old playing Call of Duty and Grand Theft Auto and scrolling TikTok unfiltered, and then going on YouTube and watching gamers, like, you know, say whatever they want, go on Twitch, all this stuff. And then they come to TV World, which is all like very beautifully crafted, and it's like very safe, and it's just not reflective of anything they're experiencing in any other media. And I'm not trying to like gore for excessive gore. I'm like, you know, you cut a mutant in half, they should bleed. You should be able to cut a mutant in half, like, for kids TV. Like death and dying is not a thing that's really allowed. Like, if there's like there's a website where you can go and it shows like every single death in like a kids TV show, I forget what it's called, and like how they die, and it's like all off screen implied. And I'm like, well, yeah, but they're also playing, like, what, Elden Ring came out, and you're like literally killing, like, massacring badass monsters, and this is for, like, kids are playing this too. Like, it's I guess I'm not trying to say, like, I want to push like X-rated content or something. I just want to create something that merges more of overall experience that kids are experiencing, so that TV doesn't become irrelevant and, you know, just like this not relatable place that has been so conservatively constricted.
I'm sure you've considered all of that, but like maybe you're the different demo, like Adventure Time, technically a kids ish show, but it's not. Almost everyone that I knew watched it, and it.
Oh yeah. It's sold for 12-year-old boys, but then like everybody watches it, right? That's how you get in the door, right? You're like, this is a show for this demographic, and then, you know, the humor and the stuff you hit on for different levels for different ages.
So what's the next, would the next step be self-publishing for, I mean, like Cake or Adult Swim or something like that, where they might be open to leaving it the cute, fun stuff, but the demographic is now older?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, so I'm taking a little bit of a, so I basically did a whole round of pitching these last couple of months where I got in touch with as every studio that I wanted to and broadcaster and pitched the idea and made connections from, because I had connections from Silly Duck Wizard, which was amazing. So like Silly Duck Wizard, I basically spent 2 years getting contacts for like every single studio that I could possibly pitch. And then Waste World, I already had all these contacts. So I just called them up and I was like, hey, remember me? I have another show. Let's talk, which was amazing. So, but I'm taking a little bit of a break. So I basically pitched to everybody. I've gotten a whole ton of rejections, which is great. And just some just like silence, which I think is a rejection as well. But for me, what I want to do, because I really want to keep pushing this idea, is I just wrote a script. I got my friend to review it. And I need to work on that a lot. But I would like to take that to maybe take like a minute and a half and turn that into like a pivotal point in the script and turn that into an animatic and then turn that into maybe a finalized piece of animation. So that I think would be really fun to do and also show people, because one thing I learned from Silly Duck Wizard is you can create a deck and say, this show is starring a wizard and he's kind of silly and he's loopy and he talks to the camera and he has these ducks, but there's another thing to just show them what that looks like. And the Silly Duck Wizard pitch was so strong because I actually had the finalized animation where people could just watch it and, you know, you just get it immediately. You get the humor, you get the style, you understand it, versus like Waste World. I'm like, well, you know, the main character, he's silly and like sings to himself, but he's also like very insecure and will like go and hide under a box when he's like feeling afraid, and then he'll spend all afternoon creating robots to solve his problems. When I could just show how he's interacting with the world, for instance, like through animation, which would be so much easier to get.
I like that since you haven't built a robot, you built a character who's going to build a robot.
Yeah, his biggest hobby is he's a robot builder. He's a master robot builder. He builds robots to solve all his problems.
You're very meta. It's very fun.
Oh no. I'm like, what do I want to be in real life? I'll just make a character that is that. But it's, I want to be a wizard, so I just make a wizard. I want to build robots, so I make a character.
You kind of do that. You pick things, basically, you find a reason to get paid or career, like to fit in your career of how to craft what you wanted to craft.
I want to be rich, so I'll have my character win the lottery.
There you go.
At some certain point, that will be one of the episodes.
Yeah.
And then you'll have a network note. Why do they have to be rich? Can we go back real? One quick thing is, you wrote a script. That's new for you. Like, you boarded, you developed. How did you work into writing a script?
It was very hard. I don't think I did a good job. But they teach you some script writing in school. So I had some experience with just like seeing scripts. Finding scripts online was very tough, but before I did this, I actually reached out to a couple of contacts that I made from my podcast, and they sent me some really amazing, some script writers for TV shows, and they sent me some really amazing resources that I looked over beforehand, and then I'm hoping that maybe I'll get some of them to review my script when I feel like it's in a good place as well. But it's tough because like, I was like, I'm trying to like write the dialogue for like a humorous moment. And my instinct was just to draw it. So I just went and drew it. And I was like happy with that. But I'm like, now I have to turn this into words. And like, so-and-so looks over here and then sees this and then says this. And like, it's, even though I wrote a whole novel and stuff, like script writing is intimidating.
Well, Out of curiosity, so you could have a board-driven show and you do board, even though you decide not to go that path. I'm curious why you went for the script as opposed to sticking with board-driven.
Yeah, because it's much easier and faster. And basically every single person I pitched asked for a script. Even with Silly Duck Wizard, they asked for a script, which I had. And so I don't really have a good answer other than I just thought this would be a good idea to do.
Well, you learn a new thing. And plus, yeah. You didn't do a good job. It's your first one. You did it. You finished it.
That's amazing.
But you finished it. That's a good job.
Thank you.
I kind of feel like a good chunk of your success and where you are now is because you always finish things.
Yeah.
Like whether it was when you said you were like in fifth grade or 15, there was a five involved. But when you were doing the clay and stop motion stuff, like you finished them. When you did the watercolors, you finished them. You finish everything. And then you just put it out. And those are like little fishing lures all over the world in digital space that just get an email from Peter Hannett.
Yeah, that's very true. I get a lot of people. So for instance, like I have my shared in portfolio on the internet and I use my SEO tactics to make sure it comes up high whenever anybody's searching for a shared in animation program. And as such, I get tons of emails every fall from students wanting to get into the program, asking for advice. And I don't know, if 30 people email me, maybe one or two follow up and actually finish their portfolio. And they don't always get in, but like that's a huge accomplishment. Like I know how tough it is to aspire to do something and then actually set out and do it. And like with the script, like I feel like I procrastinated for weeks and weeks. Like I remember having a conversation with one of the big broadcasters and like, send us a script whenever you have it. And it's like 2 months have gone by and I just finished it like I started and finished it within 2 days, like in my spare time. But it was just like the mental hurdle of getting to that point, being like, I don't know how to write a script. I don't know what to do. I'm going to research forever and not start. And then just starting and finishing like didn't take that long, but now I have a script. That's cool. More than all the people that say they want to do something and then don't do it. Like,
right. Huge pet peeve. Someone goes like, they want to be a writer or I want to be a composer. Like you can do that.
Just
you
be a composer.
No one has to pay you to do it. Like you should just, if you want to do it, go fucking do it.
Yeah. That's a big part of my journey actually, because like while I was in my business career, I was still wanting to be an animator and work on TV shows. And I was dumb. I wasn't doing anything, but I had this like dream that somebody would just see that I have a good personality and like maybe be a little bit creative and give me an opportunity. I was like waiting for somebody to like hand me an opportunity in TV animation world. But like all of my work that I was executing was for business and content and SEO and presentations. And like nobody I knew in my network was an animator. There was no chance I would ever become an animator. Like my idea was like, well, maybe when I retire, then I'll start animating. And then when I realized that I actually wanted to do that, I like slapped myself proverbially. It was like, why don't I just animate now? Why am I waiting till I retire?
Yeah.
So that's where the whole journey started. And like, I don't know, I started in 2018. Yeah. It's now 4 years later and I feel good. I've gotten a few opportunities that like I would have never ever received my entire life on that other path. And it just, you know, it's what we're talking about.
Well, and look at the time, like not only did you do it over 4 years, you did it over three of those basically being shut down.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it's like in Canada. I know what it was like so in California, it was wild because when it shut down, everything literally shut. And we've never had freeways that were closed. And it was just so weird. It's like everything was stopped. You did it through all of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's impressive.
Thanks.
In 4 years, if you look at what you've done. So, okay. In 4 years, went to school, left because you were doing the work, worked for a studio doing a network show. You did private contract interstitials that are 100% you, brought back for four to the point where they were I'm not gonna say begging because I don't, but they were asking you to come back and you're like, I don't know if I can. And they're like, no, please. Right. Yeah. That's in 4 years. So you're working on a thing that I don't know if we could talk about. We don't know much about it, but I don't know what you want to say about what you're working on right now.
All I can say is that I'm animating on a video game. That's it.
Okay.
It's unreleased. Doesn't have any prior existence. So that's all I can say.
No priors. It's good. But so you've done all of that in basically 4 or 5 years. And three of those being the most challenging of the last 100 years, aside from World War II, which we might have a three, so who knows?
Oh, no.
Like, look at what you've done in that time. The trajectory that you've gone from, you're skyrocketing. I don't see how anything slows down for you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks. I hope it keeps skyrocketing. It would be amazing to be a showrunner or director and also build some more stability in my life, because, like, you know, going to school and then leaving and then being on a 6-month contract and then now I'm on an 8-month contract, and like, it, when in the business world you can stay there forever. Like, I was professionally working for, I guess, 7 years, not including co-ops and school, but like, I could have stayed. I worked at 2 companies and I could have stayed there my whole career. Like, I could still be there. Benefits, retirement on the way, et cetera. Like, it's super stable.
So is that because you have the business acumen and I'm sure you give a lot of forethought to those things. What are the thoughts you've given to, so showrunner, smash success, you might get like maybe 7 seasons. If, like, I'm talking like amazing success, right? And that's running it. And that's if you are the runner the whole time.
Yeah.
And then you have animation, which, a month here, a week here, a couple months there. Yeah. Maybe you go to a studio, but then you're only working on the studio while their shows are on. Like, have you gauged your end goal based on those paths?
If everything works out perfectly, I would love Silly Duck Wizard to be my entrance into directing show running, which would then give me more credentials and experience to hopefully work on a bigger show. Or hopefully it's my show. And then my idea from there is to have enough connections, have enough industry know-how, have the resources and finances to hopefully start my own studio type of thing. Which I'm
in Canada.
I would love if it was in Toronto, because like, the part of the reason why I blocked off becoming a stop motion animator for so long, there was just I didn't see any opportunity. So I would love to create opportunity here for the people who are trying to make it as stop motion animators, and there's just nothing here. So that would be a phenomenal life, I think, and career. And you know, there's probably going to be a lot of ups and downs if that happens, but that's like there's so much that has to coincidentally happen for those things to happen, that that's like a dream, I guess. And in the meantime, like, I'm working on this video game, and like, I'm thinking of like self-producing another short by the end of the year. So in the meantime, I'm just trying to keep producing work and putting out those hooks that you said. Like, I have the podcast and I'm doing these little projects here and there, and I'm working on random stuff to, like, you know, just keep putting out feelers to have a career. I can't bank on just one thing.
Freelancing career, I fully believe, is lasting. Because like, one person will hire you and they might want to hire you again, but the next time might be like 5 years later. Like, I had people hire me a decade after they hired me the first time. So if you're not around long enough, there's no chance of that.
100%.
About animation industry podcast.
Yeah. I've never heard of it.
Oh no.
It's so good. It's so good. It's enjoyable. It really is.
Yeah. AIP with a duck. Super cute. I just wondering, is it because being a host, being a podcast interviewing people, you feel it fits to your personality? You think you can do it? Or just what makes you to decide to go with this project for such a long term? Yeah.
So I was actually at Taffy. It was October 2018. I just started school September 2018. And just for my business past, I was like, conferences are important for networking and learning, so I'm going to go to this thing, and I'm a student, so I can get in for, I think, a discounted or free rate. So I went, and I didn't know anybody, And some really cool speakers were speaking. There was Fred Seibert. There was Brett Jubenville. There was a couple other people. And I was just sitting by myself and my mind is like buzzing because I'm like, I love this and I want to know all these people, but I don't know how to make any connections right now because I don't have any work. I'm new to the industry and all I can say is like, I love animation. I'm going to school. And I had a few of those conversations and they're, you know, they're like, it's tough to meet random people at a conference and when you're by yourself and like have a sustained conversation because like somebody wants to go get a coffee and you're like, okay, bye. Or like you feel awkward and then you're like, okay, bye. So I was talking to my old boss, his name is Shiv, from the software company that I was previously working at. And he had started a podcast on software as a service business, SaaS. Mm-hmm. Business where he would interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, et cetera. And like, resource info share, learn what their process is, et cetera. So he's like, why don't you, I was texting him while I was at this conference. He was really, he was extremely supportive of like this career change for me, even though he's my boss, which was amazing. And he's like, why don't you, as a way to connect, ask each of the speakers to be on your podcast? And I was like, I don't have a podcast. I feel nervous, but he was really encouraging me. So after each of the speakers spoke, I walked up to them. I like waited in line. I waited until every single person had already talked to them. So I was the last person because I was like super nervous. And I just was like, hey, I'm starting a podcast. I would love if you gave a similar talk on my podcast. Would you be interested? They all said yes, maybe out of nervousness or whatnot. Two of the speakers followed up with me, Brett Jubenville and Fred Seibert. And they were my first two episodes and they were fantastic. And I learned so much because I got to pick their brain and it just went from there. I just like started every day on the train to school. I would just reach out to as many people in the industry as possible, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, email, anybody I thought was interesting. And then I had like, I could name drop Fred Seibert because like he started Frederator. He's the guy who produced Adventure Time. Like he has his own studio. Like he was the CEO of Hanna-Barbera back in the day. Like everybody in the industry is like super impressive guy and super heartfelt, like genuine guy as well. So I just name dropped him and that helped a lot to get it going. And then I ended up getting so many interviews. I just started publishing weekly. And then it just spiraled from there. Like I didn't really, I intended to keep it going, but now it just kind of runs itself. Like people either come in contact with me. There's some PR agencies that have found me that work with me to set up interviews for directors and whatnot of shows that coming out. And I also just reach out to people that I'm interested in chatting with. And honestly, it's really changed my career trajectory because I used it in the beginning as a way of really validating if I wanted to be a storyboard artist. I talked to a lot of storyboard artists at the beginning to really pick their brains on how they got there, what they did in their portfolios and how they like their job. The more I talked to them, I was like, this is really cool, but I'm not naturally inclined to do these things. And then the more I talked to stop motion animators, I'm like, I feel, even though I'm closed off to this, everything they're saying sounds exciting to me and I can't wait to try these things. So that's where just talking to people in the industry really opened my mind up back to stop motion and helped me realize what strengths I already have that I should put more focus on in rather than trying to put more focus in things I'm not naturally inclined to do. Like I'm not naturally a storyboard artist, even though I spent a lot of time thinking I wanted to do that and like learning and getting better at it. But it was like, there's a difference when you're like just naturally interested in learning super tedious, annoying stuff and spending a lot of time that other people are like, why are you learning this? Versus like, really studying and going hard at something that doesn't feel natural. Like, you know, it gets more laborious over time, less exciting. You create something and then look at somebody else who creates something in the same amount of time or less that they love doing it. You're like, why does mine just look like this stiff formula thing? And I'm just following what the rules are. And theirs looks like this amazing thing that's creative and super fun. So like, that's kind of how storyboarding ended up feeling, even though I enjoy it. But when I got into claymation and stop motion, it just feels so natural.
Wow.
This is totally. I just love the idea of you being in the back of all the lines. So you'd be the last person to talk because you're timid, but you're 6'4". So the person waiting is looking, going like, there's the really tall person in the back. And they're just like, yeah, here he comes. Like you can't hide when you're that tall. So you're just.
I, yep. Yeah, I'm like super extroverted one-on-one, but like when it comes to like group settings, like I'm super shy. I don't like raising my hand. I don't like talking. Like, I don't know, but I have no problem hosting either.
It's a lot easier.
You're natural.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting by listening to your guests have a lovely chat, knowing their story, but at the same time, you also kind of find yourself because sometimes you kind of have a ripple effect or you have an echo when they say certain things kind of just
totally.
Yeah. And yeah, it's not only the chat, but you need to prepare all the material. You need to get to know your guests earlier or later. You need to do all the communication. So I was wondering that this whole process, you're also, you know, you're an artist. You need to make work. So do you remember any challenges you got or some moment you think, I think I should stop for a while or something?
Are you trying to talk him out of it? No, he's doing well.
So So what I used to do is have one chat a week and publish that chat that week. And then I quickly realized that's so much work. So how the podcast currently is set up is I do a whole bunch of interviews over a couple of months, like maybe like 20, 30 interviews. And then I have a big backlog and then I don't do any interviews for like 4 months. And I just post every single week on Tuesdays. There's a lot of preparation that's gone into the podcast. Like I always research the artists before I talk to them, no matter if they've come to me or I go to them. I try to become familiar with their work, like watch the film they've made or the TV show or clips or whatever, which takes a lot of time as well. And I used to do, well, you do this. I used to do a pre-chat the week before our interview.
We don't do, what are you talking about?
Oh no, you don't do pre-chat.
Oh, no, of course not.
I don't know what that other chat we had was. I used to do a pre-chat, which would last an hour or two where I would just get to know them. We would talk about topics, but two things. As I started getting the PR agencies worked with me and started giving me some higher profile interviews, those people didn't have time to do pre-chats. So then I remember the first time I was like, oh my goodness, I feel so unprepared, and went fine. Like I asked my typical questions, we bounced back and we got a good interview out of it. And then slowly I just stopped doing the pre-chats and found that I enjoy the candid moments more, I guess. In the moment, some people still ask for pre-chats. I'm totally happy to do them because I just love, like in a pre-chat, you talk about stuff you don't say online, you share the shit of what good and bad, you share, you know, all this stuff that you don't hear in the podcast, which the
blackmail material.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. But I also spent a lot of time weirdly watching Oprah to get better at interviewing skills because I reached a point in my podcast where I was just mostly asking technical questions. How do you do this? How do you do that? And I realized that like the TED Talks and podcasts and stuff that I was listening to feel so much more exciting and interesting when somebody shares kind of the heart and feelings of why they did something. And I was having a hard time getting that out. And so that's why I was watching Oprah, because like she, you like her or not, she's a great interviewer. She just can get to the, because like, you know, you bring somebody on that you've never talked to before and you have to have a entertaining enough conversation so that people are intrigued to listen. And she's able to get to the emotional responses of people like very quickly. And she has tactics, you know, like leaning closer, touching, asking very intricate questions, like stuff like that. So I remember there was actually a point
like just,
okay. just touch the screen. Yeah. Over Zoom is different. I remember, I won't say which episode, but there was a point where, the podcast became a little bit monotonous of me asking the same questions every single time. I would always come with the exact same questions on a piece of paper. And I remember the guest was chatting and I was daydreaming and they stopped chatting. And there was a good long pause where I didn't even realize, and I didn't even know what to ask them next. Cause I wasn't even paying attention to what they were saying. It was really embarrassing. And I love this person so much and I will never reveal which episode this is in. But it was a moment for me where I was like, why am I doing this? Should I continue doing this? And if somebody's listening to this, like, this isn't a good experience either. It's not a good experience for the guest, me, or them. So I had a little bit of a moment where I was like, why am I doing this? I'm doing this because I love to connect with artists. I'm learning so much. I want to build more connections in a community around this. Like, I want people to listen to this. A big part of the podcast as well is, like, I was obsessed with reading Wikipedia articles about directors and successful animators for a long time. Like, as soon as any, I'd watch the end of credits and be like, who's the director? Go Wikipedia them. And it'd be like, so-and-so went to school. Then they were a director. I'd be like, what the fuck? Like, this is not cool at all. There's no in between. So part of what I realized is, like, I want to share people's stories so they feel more real, to inspire other people to take the chances, and that it can be done. It doesn't feel like this Hollywood exists somewhere else and I can't do this. Mm-hmm. So when I realized that I wanted to do all those things, then I kind of changed my interviewing style to, like, get to know the person and get to know the reasons and emotional responses of why they went through things and how difficult things were for them. And what are some of the things that went easy, and like, all these things. So the podcast has changed a lot for me. I'm still trying to get better as an interviewer, but I hope I'm improving.
Of course, come on. You don't need to do the edit most of the time, right? It just so naturally just, you know, be on one after another episode.
Yeah. Lately, actually, what I've been doing is having no questions up front unless they ask, and try to be completely on the spot while trying to also lead them in a way that tells their story best. So,
so hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard.
Yeah. I don't know how you do it, especially without editing. Because, I mean, we're going to have to cut at least 3 hours out of this one.
Well, that's the other thing. I know I'm not going to edit this. So just knowing I'm not going to edit it makes me interview in a different style, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
When I do stuff that I know I'm going to edit, I act differently. I'm like, oh, I'll just redo this take. So, but that's coming from, I've recorded like 170 episodes. So it's just from doing it over and over again.
Thank you so much for your podcast. It's
really honestly,
so many people. Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, it basically, like, you post on your story of a new episode and you tag the person, and almost every time I'm like, instant follow. Like, they're just awesome. Like, what they do is so cool.
All right. So look at your Instagram, and you're following 151 people that I've interviewed.
I didn't start listening to the beginning.
But yeah, there's so many people doing cool stuff out there that you just don't even know, especially when it comes to stop motion. There's so few people doing it. And I feel like everybody needs exposure. Like, one thing that I'm trying to do actively is reach out to more people in different countries, which is surprisingly difficult. There's too many people in North America doing this. But like, one notable one that comes to mind is like Dina Amin, who is
amazing,
like super amazing
artist.
And even since I've interviewed her, she's done so much since. Like, it's so cool to like follow some, like, cause I've been doing this for years now. To like know where somebody was at years ago and then follow their work and then like see where they've come. It's just really cool. Her interview is like one of my favorites, actually. She's a really cool person.
Well, and that's why you, not her, but your podcast is why you ended up going to Spain, right?
Not particularly. I did talk to some people from Cytoplasma's studio there, which is Eduardo and Irina, who are amazing artists. And they're also running Kinetic Armatures, that project as well. But I went because I had two colleagues from Ultra City Smiths. One moved back there with her partner and the other one, her name was Alba. And the other one's name is Crystal. And she was going to do some, she was going to go live in Spain for a while and do some experimental sand animation at Cytoplasma Studio. So I got to stay with Crystal while I was there. And she like showed me around everything. I got to see all that stuff. It was so cool and exciting. And there may be some episodes coming out from that, but we'll see.
Did you do sand animation?
No, I was there purely for leisure.
And you were this close to making it to 24 meters per second.
Yeah, I know. Right? Oh my goodness, 24 meters per second, ridiculous.
It's really good.
They're like, that insulting animation, I love it.
You were saying that the difficulty of more international guests and artists to interview, like, is it the pandemic thing or is it time zone thing?
It's just finding people. Like, I don't know. Pick a random country. Like, how do you find artists there? Like, I've gotten some through LinkedIn. I've gotten some through festivals. But yeah, also language barrier, for instance. So Yeah, but it's one of my goals to try to find more stop motion animators specifically in different countries.
Oh, yeah. Oh, nice to know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, maybe. Okay. I'll direct her, but yes.
If I Fu's have like, I know a lot of people.
Hold yeah, on. Send them my way. Even if they're not stop motion animators, send them my way. Because like,
yeah,
everything is so North American focused in the whole world and when it comes to animation. Yeah, in the UK is a big industry as well. But like when you think of Pixar and Disney, that's all people think of. And there's so much more going on everywhere, like in Brazil and Mexico. Like I've talked to animators from there, and it's super fascinating to find out how little support and funding there is, but they're still able to create some TV shows and movies that are amazing. And you're just like, wow,
yes,
amazing.
Yes.
And like in Europe, for instance, like France, Italy, like those places, like they have specific government funding programs for feature animated films to be made that just we never even hear about. So it's super
incredible.
Cool. Yeah.
I've been hired by people from Denmark who like the government gives them money to make games and animations. I'm like, what?
Yeah, right.
It's like, yeah, it's so incredible. I don't know. Canada has something similar, correct?
Yeah, we have the National Film Board of Canada, which takes on a couple of artists every year to produce an original and forward-thinking piece of animation.
Like Silly Ducks, maybe?
Maybe. I don't think that's the right type of project. Usually they take on projects that are pushing the media in terms of story or technique. So something like, for instance, like Dale and Sylvie Hayward in Montreal, they produced Bone Mother. That's a stop motion film with the NFB that was made a couple of years ago. And part of how they sold it to the NFB to take on this project was they were going to try 3D printing all the faces. So they actually used like wood fiber 3D printed faces, which was ended up really cool. You should check it out if you get a chance.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And then various artist grants in Ontario and the rest of Canada and other provinces as well, in Vancouver and whatnot. So yeah, artist grants and funds may not specifically apply to animation. They may be like creating a sculpture or a piece of art or music or storybook. There's a lot of writing grants actually for novels and kids books. So yeah, there's a lot of opportunities here, but even though there's a lot of opportunities, they're very competitive. I have tried to apply to a whole bunch of writing grants before, and it's like, how do I say this? I feel like there's a large portion of people who apply every single year, and you're competing with people who know how to put together a proper grant application versus like starting for the first time with like, you know, I'm just the artist who wants to make a silly thing. Why? Versus like the person being like, I'm creating something that pushes, you know, gender and minority voices in terms of whatever. So it's like, you know, when you're giving grants out, like, you're going to pick like this guy who wants to make a silly animation for like 2 months or like something that's more culturally and, you know, pushing the boundaries relevant. So I'm not trying to give shade or anything. I'm just saying I personally think that the grants are a little bit more competitive and not just like, here's some free money that the Americans think that we kind of have.
There's a meaningful reason for them. It's okay. Your pitch for Silly Duck Wizard, you have the animation, so you could do still frames. Have you considered taking the text and making basically a children's book out of it already?
I hope that comes out after, if a show is produced, because that would be really fun. But yeah, why not?
Why that order, out of curiosity?
I don't know. No reason.
We've had you for so long. Thank you so much.
Can you leave? I'm just
here.
No, we can finish up.
How about from previous guest's question for Terry?
Yeah. Mm. Oh, I should go find that. In the meantime, how about while I'm pulling up stuff, the socials you want to share?
Yeah. I mean, if people just search my name, I'm sure you can find me. But if you follow me on Instagram or my website, just terryibell.com or terryibell on Instagram. And if you want to listen to the podcast, you can look up Animation Industry Podcast. You can find that on my Instagram or my website either. So even if you just type in Animation Podcast, you can find it. So just look up Terry Ibell if you are interested in checking out some of the things that I've done.
I do check your website once in a while, and I like now how you like.
Oh, thank you. My website is trash. I do not like WordPress at all. If I can give negative reviews on WordPress, I will actively do that. They're not good. So I don't like my website. The formatting is awful, and it's just, it just exists as a place that I can put some stuff. So yeah. So I'm glad you like it.
I'm pretty happy. Yeah, for me, it's very interesting that yours, you have story, like usually it's artwork, but you have story with it.
Yeah. Well, before I did all of my animation, I was actively, I wrote my novel. I was actively trying to get published for short stories in magazines. I actually ended up getting maybe like four or five publications and an Editor's Choice Award for one of them, which was really cool.
And
they even hired a voice actor to read my story, which was really cool. So for a while I was seeking an agent. I had some talks with publishers. I had to like work with a contract lawyer for one of them. Didn't work out, but that's what I was pursuing before animation. And I was pursuing writing as a band-aid solution for my creative outlet. Like the whole reason I was writing is because I had this idea for a stop motion film I wanted to do. And I was writing out the screenplay or whatever, or the ideas. And then when I decided not to do stop motion anymore, I was like, what do I do with all this writing? So then I turned it into this novel. And then from that, et cetera.
Wow, thank you. That's a new thing I learned.
Yeah, everything. It really is. Okay. Anyway, we've covered that. So the question is from Threadwood, Alexis and Scott. And it's,
oh, I love them.
They are so cool.
Yeah.
Their question was, what is your favorite animation from your childhood?
Oh my goodness. Oh wow. when it comes to stop motion, it's called A Claymation Easter. It was by Will Vinton. It's with like this pig and this rabbit, and it's like pretty short, but I've watched it like 600 times and it's so creative.
Oh.
And you should check it out.
I'm looking at it right now, and that is so wild and cool looking.
Yes. There's like a scene in it where they have to do a egg race, like find Easter eggs around a amphitheater.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, they thought the best idea for this pig character would be to build this giant robotic car rabbit with legs to like crush all the other. Like, it was just so creative that I couldn't even handle it. And it's all claymation and it's masterfully done and it's so fun. And yeah, check it out.
Yeah. Okay. Nice choice.
That's when did it come out? I think I literally.
1992. See, so I would have been 4 years old.
Ooh. Okay. How about your question for your next guest?
My question for my next guest is, can you spell banana backwards?
And the next guest is someone I just worked with that I'm excited to have asked that, because I'm going to make her prove it. It's the very last thing of all of it.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Oh, that's it.
That's it. Are we leaving? Yep. Is this it? Can we all do this?
Love it.
Can we all do the Terry shelf? And then just cut it off. Okay, bye.
Bye.